statement accusing, quote, anonymous, anti-Semitic, anti-law enforcement, leftist extremists expose the photo. I'm not a racist. Well, all right. So first off, I guess just let's, for prosperity's sake, let's check this out. Bam. So there we are. Here's the photo. Now he's saying that it was far leftist, extremist, radical, anti-Semitics who are responsible for this picture getting out there. Now, if you're going to take responsibility for the photo, I would assume you would do that and not be like, well, and how do I attack Antifa? This had to have been Antifa. Antifa did something here. They're involved some way. I knew it. You posted this picture publicly on the internet. And so being someone running for political office, eventually people are going to comb through, you know, some of the old social media posts you do to find out the stuff you were into. And then when they find out that you're into some pretty extreme forms of blackface, well, then they're probably going to say, hey, by the way, the guy running for office, he's also into blackface. It's a play for sure. I mean, you can't deny that it's not a play to afterwards be like, this is the fault of Antifa. This is leftist radical extremists. But again, that doesn't really do a good job of taking responsibility for your own racism. I understand that he's like, yeah, this is indefensible. It is. And then to additionally be like, well, this is indefensible, but, hear me out. It was a different time. We were all different back then, 2007. It was, again, different time in history. We were just different people. And being that it was a different time, I do want to add that this is because of the radical left who are trying to drill up fake news. This isn't fake news. This is just some racist shit that you not only did, but you posted on social media. That was you. You were the one who posted this on social media. This is like, you know, when the audio recording surfaces from, you know, a recording made by this politician in which they say the N-word. And then the person comes forward and saying, okay, well, first off, the context is not there. Okay, this was a long time ago. And so I understand that this is a deeply offensive word for a white person to use. But I just want to say this was a long time ago in 2017 when I made that statement. And I have since learned that this is, in fact, not a good thing to do. So also radical Antifa and the left are the ones who brought this up. This would not have been in the news if it wasn't for the radical leftist extremists who are trying to make this into a news story. Just so y'all know. I'm not a racist. During an interview on Tuesday, Ward said the photo was taken before a private Halloween event, and he had forgotten all about it last week. I've done it so much in the past, I didn't know this is the one that was going to... either way. Obviously, in today's lens, this was 2007, obviously in today's lens, you look at it and you realize it's inappropriate, he told CTV News. Adding the costume was meant to portray Grammy Award-winning rapper 50 Cent. Okay, so again, that's not a defense. Even if you did, a flawless, spot on. You even had some of the, like, you know, the places where he was shot and stuff like that. You're like, this is the authentic 50, like, image. Come on, you got to admit this, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying, right? That was a good album. It's like, yeah. So that's not an excuse for blackface. Neither is saying that, like, the times they were a changing. In 2007, also not an excuse, but I love that this is the defensive play that you're doing right now. This was a different time, so the standards were different back then. Everyone was racist. Okay, so that's not compatible with anything. Second one. So I wasn't actually doing blackface. This was me doing an interpretation of 50 Cent. You know, 50 Cent, well known for always having an afro. That 50 Cent, same one. Okay, so neither of those have been working. This was Antifa. Not this was me that did it, but this is Antifa that revealed it to all of you. Antifa made this part of the discourse. So, yeah. If you're listening right now and you don't have visual, you're just listening to the podcast right now, there's a picture of a white guy who is doing full blackface, wearing an Afro wig, trying to claim that he's, in fact, 50 Cent. That's what's on screen right now. I'm not a racist. I didn't dress up to say, hey, look at me. I can mock somebody's culture or appearance. The counselor said he had drawn the ire of political activists online due to his conservative politics and outspoken support of Israel ever since the October 7th Hamas attack last year. Play number four. When in doubt, everyone else is being anti-Semitic. That's what's going on here. Hey, if you call this racist, all right, if you say this is racist, you're anti-Semitic. Because the person who was doing the blackface, in fact, is a supporter of Israel. So, any criticism of him or calling him a racist is therefore calling all Jewish people subhuman. Makes sense, right? Again, the fourth play in the long list of, why not just apologize? So many options before you, so many potential dialogue trees, so many ways to respond to a controversy. But you've gone through all the. All right, so I'm gonna get ahead of this and say I do admit this is inappropriate. But look, we got a long list of things to get through here. Was this Antifa? Was it a different time? What was I actually doing a racism, or was I trying to honor? This isn't cultural appropriation. All right, this is cultural appreciation. I'm trying to show everybody that I'm a big 50 Cent fan. I love 50 Cent. I don't really want to learn anything about 50 Cent, what he looks like, what his music's about, or what his general his history as an artist. But I am going to say that this was, in fact, me being 50 Cent. So just so you know. Yeah, cool. Ward said the family blog was maintained by his ex-wife, and he believed it to be private. However, he said the blog was taken over and turned public, and she was locked out by the hacker. Ah, hackers. It's the hackers, number 5 on the list of other things than just taking responsibility for your own history of racism. I was hacked. So this was a family blog in which I was proud to post the pictures of me in blackface, but I thought the blog was private. And then Antifa came in, and then apparently took over my wife's account a long time ago, and then unlocked the account a long time ago, and then just left the account unlocked for years. And then years went by, and then no one noticed, and then someone published the photos, and now the photos are out there. I can safely say that Antifa is responsible for going back in time again to 2007 and making me wear blackface. The blog, which is still public online, has since been edited to remove the November 2nd, 2007 page containing the photo. So you went back and you undid the hack. And you're like, well, we got hacked, see? So I'm going to go back and solve this. And then you got rid of the offending picture. But then the account remains just open. I kind of feel like nothing changed. You just deleted the photo. And the accompanying description that says the author spent 45 minutes that morning turning Ian into a black man with stage paint. Took you 45 minutes. I mean, that's love. That's love of the craft, right? If you're going to be a minstrel show performer, I mean, don't half-ass it. Go all the way. Yes, you know, some people, everyone's got to make sacrifices at some point or another in their lives. And some people need to wake up early in the mornings and apply 45 minutes of makeup to achieve what they consider to be art. 45 minutes. The offending page was public in November 2023 and was public last month, according to the nonprofit Internet Archive. Uh-oh, looks like the hackers didn't quite do the part of the story you wanted them to, which periodically preserved websites as they appeared in the given date. Ward was elected to the Colwood Council in 2022. A city spokesperson indicated that municipal governments would not take punitive measures in regards to the photo, as it was made in the personal capacity and was not municipal capacity. The city of Colwood does not endorse city representatives making public statements or actions that may be viewed by some as defensive or offensive. Our codes of ethics given us respectful and all interactions to protect personal dignity, self-esteem, the well-being of others. Ward said he has reported the alleged hack to the local police. Thanks, I guess, for wasting resources, city taxpayer-funded resources, on discovering who is responsible for this vile crime. The crime of my wife's personal blog being public, and the Internet Archive has archived it as public, but because I'm saying that it was private, and it was the hackers that made it public, the police need to investigate. So get out there, boys in blue. Find the real killers, you know? We got to track them down. The West Shore RCMP, which is responsible for police in the Colwood area, did not respond to a request to confirm whether the investigation was underway regarding the complaint. I hope this is one of those that you will dismiss. I was one of those in the long list of, well, we only have so many resources to be able to dictate on to what we're going to prioritize in terms of our policing. And unfortunately, this one doesn't seem to be of the highest of emergencies. So we're certainly going to state that we received a call to investigate the hack of this personal council member's wife's publicly available account, which the Internet Archive also establishes was publicly available, as in it was not privatized, then hacked, then turned public. But either way, you know, maybe someone along the way will discover that. And yeah, he's a victim. He's a victim of Antifa, the radical left extremists, and also anti-Semites, anti-Semites who wanted to, again, criticize his support of Israel by publicly stating, if you look in this guy's wife's page, you will see pictures of him in blackface, where they write out that it actually took him 45 minutes to achieve the intended effect of him wanting to do a minstrel show. And that's Antifa for you. They're playing the long game, you know. With Christopher Rufo, it's the same thing. Christopher Rufo, again, you know, being revealed to have been an Ashley Madison, not just, you know, having his email on the list, but potentially being a member of the website. That date backs all the way to, what, 2014? And him now saying that, like, well, this was actually, I'm guessing, you know, some third party leftist extremist trying to sign me up for a website that, again, it shows that I was a part of before I was a public figure or anyone knew who I was. So, again, in 2014, you were not a public figure. No one knew of you. And then at that point, Antifa super soldiers who play the extreme long game found an email that they, again, were going to associate with someone they would know that in 10 plus years would eventually become the centerpiece of most right-wing culture war issues that attack immigrants, LGBTQ plus people, people of color. But they knew that, so they just did the long game and then signed you up, made you an account, had you interacting with the database, and then just waited. Not for the first leak. No, too much patience for that. Waited until the second leak came along, and then they knew at that point, we got him. The whole operation is coming together, see? And that's what it is. Mark Robinson, too, is trying to pull that same playbook, where he's like, this was not me, this is fake news. I, in fact, was not the person who for years had been posting in porn forums about how I'm a black Nazi, how I love Hitler, how I love the KKK, all that kind of stuff, how I'm also into drinking my sister-in-law's piss. All of that was being done by malicious actors trying to, again, create a story where there is none. And then it's like, right, but you weren't a public figure back then, and you were in your 40s, and everything tracks in terms of being able to associate you with that account, including everything from multiple emails and IP signatures to the language and the tone and the cadence in which they're written, and corresponding to you also publicly posting on other social media accounts at the exact same time, using again the same email and even the same username. You weren't even careful enough to make a different username when you were posting horny in the horny forums, because I guess the hubris, again, people just thinking that they're never going to get caught for any of this, that in your 40s you were horny posting on forums and then thinking I should become a public figure afterwards. And then if that happens, I'll just blame the radical left. That's all you got to do, I guess. Now, for Mark Robinson, he got, you know, he gooned way too close to the sun. You are not going to be in the good graces of MAGA if you're not only showing yourself to be, you know, massively into your sister-in-law cheating, breaking the covenant of marriage. I mean, that is tolerable. But saying that you're really, really into trans porn, that's the part where MAGA's like, oh, shit. All right, well, we can't fuck with this guy anymore. You know, he's got too much on him. Doug Ford talking about homeless people, saying they need to get off their ass and start working.
Do you know what the best way to get people be able to get out of the encampments, get out of homeless? Get an application and drop it off one of these companies and start working. You need to start working if you're healthy. Bottom line, if you're unhealthy, I'll take care of you the rest of my life. Your life will take care of you. But if you're healthy, get off your ASS and start working like everyone else is. Very simple.
This reminds me of the late great Greg Giraldo, who was a comedian. And most people now, I guess, he's already passed away, but most people know him from roasts and Comedy Central roasts, which is really too bad because his actual stand-up routines dealt a lot with homelessness. And he had a lot of really great lines, one of them being like, hey, you know, people are always complaining. Why did you give that homeless guy money? He's just going to spend it on drugs and alcohol. Then I realized that's what I'm going to spend it on. And I had no trouble with it. And I was like, that's a great line. Good setup, good delivery, good, you know, everything. He's got another one where it's just like, and people always talking about how, why don't you get a job? Last I checked, the guy over there, his pants are falling down and he's got a needle in his arm. I'm guessing his resume hasn't been updated in a while. Like, when was the last time that you applied for a job? Do you know what the process entails? Do you think that it's just as easy as every single person who's living on the street is just like, wait, what? Oh, get a job. Oh, shit. Oh, I didn't think... Here I was thinking that all these things, all the things that I take for granted, I could just upend at any given point if I just, yes, walk on down to my computer and my printer, type up and update my resume. Hasn't been updated in some time, I might say, but sure, there's going to be a little work gap in there. But anyways, update my resume, put in the extra languages that I speak, print it off on the printer with the electricity that I also have, also the access to the internet that I have. And so, yeah, boom, now we got a resume. And now I guess, yeah, probably should shower in the shower and stuff I have, change clothes with the clothes I also have, make myself presentable, as it were, and then go in for a few interviews. Hopefully, I'll be able to get the callbacks that I will receive on my cell phone that I also have in my pocket, and then maybe go for a second interview with so many companies in a very, very difficult climate for getting employment right now. Just that easy. That's all you got to do. It's super, super simple. Before I was a jabroni on the internet, I had jobs working in the film industry. And before I had jobs working in the film industry, I had a lot of jobs that I absolutely despised and hated. But they were jobs I had to take because you got to get jobs just to be able to, yeah, pay rent and do stuff like that. I got to tell you, getting jobs in the film industry, I went through some cycles where I would send out close to 60 to 80 job applications, the resumes, the full on everything on there. You know, I am bilingual, you know, blah, blah, blah. I worked in this. I went to college. I can put that on my resume, blah, blah, blah. No callbacks, no callbacksies through, I would say, the vast majority of them. You know, you give out 60 job applications, you get one or two callbacks. Of those one or two callbacks, no guarantee that you're going to get the job. And so that's someone who on paper has it all. You know, I have graduated from college. I have been employed, whether it be through jobs that have minimum wage employment all the way up to regular jobs, salary jobs. I have a worker history. I have great, callback experiences with previous employers. The prior bosses I had would give me a glowing review when I call in. All that. With everything right on paper, you know, young, excited, ready to you know, help contribute to a company's growth in exchange for my labor. Still, even then, it's you put out fuck tons of job applications. You get a couple callbacks. Of those callbacks, you get a very small percentage of getting that job. That's, again, that's someone who has on paper the things you're supposed to have, who has played the game, played by the rules for the most part, and there you have it. And it's still very, very difficult to get a job. And you could say, well, that's because you're applying in dream jobs, Lance. It's like, no, a lot of the jobs I was applying for was to be a shitty fucking PA or work in the ground level at some film studio where I know I would be treated like shit, because I've been treated like shit. I've worked the PA jobs. I've worked those shitty ass jobs where you're just basically a servant for the entire team. It's like, hey, by the way, Lance, we need 27 coffees. Here's all the orders on this list. Go out, get them. You need to be back in at least 15 minutes. What? There's no human way for 27 coffees to be made in 15 minutes. Well, you got to get back in 15 minutes because we have another order for you. You got to go back over there. You got to pick that up. And then we got a whole bunch of lighting gear that I know you're not licensed to drive one of these kind of trucks, but I don't give a fuck. Get over there. Go drive that truck. Bring that over to location B right now. Yeah, you're not unionized, so you don't get any benefits. I can treat you like shit and blah, blah, blah. Get out there. Hey, if you don't do exactly what we're asking you to do, you get fired. You're getting fired because there's literally thousands of other people who want to have your position, the shitty ass position that you have right now. So, hey, unless you're willing to do the impossible right now for very, very little money, you're getting fired. You're getting scrapped. That's the dream job. That's working in the film industry. That's like, yeah, that's my entire life. I've loved movies and TV. I've always wanted to be a part of it in some capacity. And now I got it. I got my dream job. Look at this. And it fucking sucks. And how are you supposed to pay rent with these kind of things? And every day you go home sad and like, but if I just do it for 5 more years, then I can go up to going from being the fucking the PA to something else. The assistant to, I don't know, the third director. And that'll be better a little bit. Maybe even if I put in enough time and I get a single 2 or 3 credits on a script or on something, I can apply to join the union. Who knows? In 10 years' time, maybe I'll be able to climb up to that next little ladder. This, again, this is all on paper. Someone who has done the right thing. People living on the street, in what fucking fantasy land do you have it in your head that every single one of them hasn't thought of this? Like, they're all just like, ugh. The problem with homeless people is that none of them have thought of getting a job. Because they got a job. then they could afford to pay rent, and then they could afford not to be homeless. It that's what bugs me. So I'm now, as a politician who's been paid a lot and gets a monstrously amazing pension from the taxpayers, I'm going to get in front of a microphone and vilify them and be like, get off your ass, you lazy fucks. Get out there and get a job like the rest of us, you lazy hacks. You know what's also awesome, by the way? I don't know if you've ever seen those segments that a lot of like conservative Fox News types likes to do, where they will like pretend to be an unhoused person for a prolonged period of time. Well, they'll be like, I'm just going to show you how easy it is to live on the street, all right? So I'm going to try and show you what it's like to go from nothing to everything. And they always fucking have the worst fucking times when it's like, okay, so how about for this test? How about you're not going to start from nothing? You don't have to do the whole you live on the street and then you basically beg for a while. And then when you accumulate enough money, you buy a suit. And then that suit is what you use to apply for a job. And then, no, we're not going to try that fantasy. What about this? What about you can start off your first month, you have a very small apartment, one bedroom, something like that. And your rent is only about, say, $1,000 a month, which is way below what the rent actually is in Vancouver. But that's where you start off. Now you start with a minimum wage job. And now climb out of this. Get out of the situation right now. And do whatever you got to do. But you're being paid minimum wage. You have to pay rent. You have to buy your own food. You have to pay for your internet. You have to pay for your cell phone. And all of a sudden, all these expenses start to pile up. Heaven forbid you want to go out and enjoy yourself. You know, spend $20 on a movie ticket or something like that. No. You better be saving every single dollar and penny, because you got to keep doing this over and over and over again. Next month, you're going to have to do it all again. So get out there and make something of yourself. And every single time these experiments happen, it's so funny to watch the results end up being, it was really hard. Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. It was just really hard to try and make it all. Your brain gets completely drained from the 8 hours of minimum wage work. You get home, you have no energy to do anything else. But then I was trying to start the side hustle when I got home. But then I just honestly found myself either wanting to watch TV or drink. And I would have to do that. And then I would have to go the next morning and do the whole thing again. And then this perpetual cycle. And then when I was unable to make rent, or was getting harder to make rent, I started looking out to taking out maybe, you know, those little, like, you know, extra paycheck loans that you see every single street corner have. But then when you do that, they don't tell you that, in fact, you actually have like 30% interest on that. So the next month, when you're like, okay, so I needed that to get through month A, but now that I'm on month B, I owe an additional $200 to $300 just in interest. So I don't even pay off my loan from that month. I have to actually just pay the $300 to be able to not accrue more interest. So that's just going to compound it to month C now, where I'm going to be, you know, spiraling in debt. But don't worry, I got a solution. I got myself a credit card, so the credit card is going to help. I've now been approved for a very high interest credit card, which unfortunately has now spiraled me into more debt. It seems I'm fucked, but I'm doing everything right, playing by the rules, you know, not stealing, not robbing, not cheating, not even doing a side hustle. You know, I'm just doing exactly what I'm supposed to do, but it's fucking hard. It's fucking impossible. Well, yeah, you know, again, this complete lack of empathy. By the way, if you're Canadian and you're watching this, the NDP just put forward a motion for universal basic income. It's not going to pass, but if you ever were excited about the idea of there being a universal basic income in Canada, hey, that motion, Bill C-223, is being tabled right now. Only people who are going to vote on it are probably the NDP. The Conservatives will shut it down, the Liberals will shut it down, but just so you know, if you wanted a universal basic income, aka every month you have a guaranteed set amount of money just given to you. How? By taxing the rich. That's how they're planning to pay for it. Said what the bill is saying, that if they taxed a lot of the richest companies, corporations, and Canadians, well, they could afford to pay for universal basic income, so that poor people and people who can't work, people with disabilities, people who have all kinds of difficulties, you know, entering the workforce, they would have some kind of standardized basic living income. But yeah, just that. But they are making you eat the bugs. We got to talk about forcing children to eat bugs. This was the kind of stuff that I used to see relegated to kind of the shoe on head, Tucker Carlson-esque, a little more conspiratorial corners of the internet. But usually there's this, like, I don't know, right-wing fixation with people eating bugs. I'm sure, like, you know, Soylent Green, Blade Runner, some of that, like, you know, science fiction has played into people's perception that eventually the cabal of elites is going to force all of us to not be able to eat food, and we're all going to have to live in this dystopian future where every single day all we do is consume insects. That idea becomes very scary. If you combine it with climate change fears as well, where it's like, well, they're saying that apparently the entire meat industry is contributing very, very rapidly to climate change, and we should do something about that, and their solution is apparently to make us eat insects and kind of stuff. The ridiculous thing about this and the fear-mongering around this is that I hate to tell it to everybody, but you're already eating bugs. You might not know it, but a lot of the dyes, for example, that are used in food, specifically red dye, the majority of that comes from bugs, from insects. When you're eating food that has a very nice, vibrant, reddish color to it, yes, you can use synthetic artificial ways to color things, such as, you know, red dye number 7 or whatever they are. Not great for the organs, but a healthier way, and actually a very cheap way to mass produce dyes and coloring for food, is insects. And so it's been a way for a long time for them to put certain kinds of colors in the foods that you enjoy consuming on a regular basis. It's one of those things where it's like no one thinks about it because you don't taste it. Like, you know, when you buy into gooey chew bar number 12 or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's got the healthy redness to it, right? Oh, that's the redness I seek. That could have been, you know, in part done by insects. I'm not saying this to scare you. I'm not saying this to frighten you. I'm just saying that the concept of insects and eating insects is something that the right tries to fearmonger with in such a way that it's very bizarre and conspiratorial, when again, the mass introduction of either insect proteins or insect colorings or all that kind of stuff into the food supply has been done for a very long time. I'm not even getting into the racism and, you know, the targeting of people of other cultures who do eat insects and people freaking out about that in the West, where it's just like, look, I may eat children all day long, lambs, all right? I will have the mass slaughter of baby sheep. I will do that every single day. I will have baby sheep that are like chained so that their muscles don't really develop, and then they're all nice and juicy and ready for my consumption. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the mass production of lamb meat, aka children eating babies. I'm fine with that. But if you, for some reason, if I see you eating a cricket, well, you're a savage. You're a savage, you are. You're a brutal savage for eating that cricket. And again, it can be a cultural thing, can be a lot of things. But yes, there's a lot of preparation consumption of insects. And I'm sorry to tell you all, it can be absolutely delicious. All right. If you've ever gone to Mexico, I mean, man, they have a really delicious, spicy way to fry up some bugs. And it doesn't even taste what you think. It just tastes like crunchy spiciness. It just tastes like chili peppers and other stuff like that, you know, fried in with the thing. But no one is trying to get you to eat insects. No one's trying to turn your dinner tray into just a plate of worms and be like, oh, climate change, woke. I'm sorry. Yeah, but we gotta make the woke dinner plate for you. It's just covered in bugs and stuff like that. The BC Conservative leader, John Rustad, delivered a conspiratorial speech at a convoy-like conference last year where he warned the audience that children are forced to eat bugs. Rustad was the headline speaker at the 2023 Reclaiming Canada Conference, an event hosted by a convoy spin-off group called We Unify. The conference was billed as a celebration of the anniversary of the Freedom Convoy. In addition to the 2022 Freedom Convoy, a second national conference was held in Victoria, British Columbia, to assemble a coalition of leaders including blah, 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 other speakers from the blah, 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 more people. During his speech, Rustad referenced the far-right conspiracy theory about climate change and bugs. Just about a year or two ago, the new plant was built in Ontario, I think in the Ottawa area. This plant produces 40,000 tons of bug protein for human and animal consumption. This is the second part, which is also a lot more crucial and important. We do produce a lot of things that have protein to feed to the things we turn into the protein that we eat. It takes a lot of water and a lot of soy to make factory farmed meat. When you're eating a steak, or you're eating a chicken breast, or you're eating a chicken thigh, or even a lamb chop, any of that, it had to have been given a lot of other protein and fuel to create the animal that we then slaughtered to harvest to give to you. That's why when people are like, you know, there's a big difference between, say, hunting your own game, because those are animals who live in the wild, who have been eating berries and other stuff from the trees. They've been foraging on their own time, versus we have a mass production of factory farming where we are then again, yes, using vast amounts of resources to feed our food. We need to feed our food before we consume our food, which is why, again, it can be quite a toll on just civilization as a whole to be able to produce mass and vast amounts of meat for us all to eat. That's where it all comes from. But the idea that they're going to be feeding you bugs because of climate change, that's where the right-wing conspiratorial part comes in. He said 40,000 tons of bugs. And there's a second plant that's now in the process of being built. This is what they think is the solution. And I can tell you, stopping cows from farting and belching is not going to change the weather. But I'll tell you what it will do. It will destroy our quality of life. Limiting our ability to move around in the name of climate change just makes us vulnerable to more government control. It takes away our freedoms. This is not Texas. This is British Columbia, Canada. This is the guy running for the BC Conservatives, by the way. Yes, he was not in BC when he was giving the speech, but he's still the guy running for the party. He kind of looks like Mr. Burns, who just got caught having an affair. That's perpetually what his demeanor and his swagger is like.
Just about a year or two ago now, the new plant was built in Ontario, I think in the Ottawa area. This plant produces 40,000 tons of bug protein for humans.
See what I mean? Now you can't unsee it, can you? No, I know Mr. Burns is single. I was a Simpsons 3-8 season fanatic, all right? But and Smithers technically could be Mr. Burns' wife if you really want to get into canon. But that's a one-sided relationship. We have to be honest with ourselves there. But you see what I mean? Just like, he always sounds as if like something bad just happened. They're getting us to eat the bugs.
Human and animal consumption. 40,000 tons of bug. And there's a second plant that's now in the process of being built. This is what they think is the solution. And I can tell you, stopping cows from farting and belching is not going to change the weather. But I tell you what it will do. It'll destroy our quality of life. Limiting our ability to move around in the name of climate change just makes us vulnerable to more government control.
Same guy who went on Jordan Peterson's podcast and said, why are we vilifying carbon when we're carbon-based life forms? And Jordan, no correction.
Oh, bloody hell. That's so true. Why would anyone? Oh, that's because of the radical left, Antifa, try to make us forget that we're carbon. We're bloody carbon, we are.
And you're just like, we are. We're made of carbon. We're also made of water. Pretty sure if you tried to stay underwater, despite being made mostly of it, you'll die. I don't know if being made of carbon is an argument against climate change in any way, shape, or form. We're made up of atoms. I'm pretty sure if a piano fell on your skull, which is also made of atoms, it'll kill you. It's an utterly ridiculous thing to make, but here we are. Cool. The idea that the government will force people to eat insects is linked to a conspiracy theory sparked by the World Economic Forum report that highlights why eating insects could help reduce the impacts of climate change. 1 year earlier, a cricket factory in London, Ontario, that primarily produces pet food, found itself at the center of a global conspiracy theory fueled by misinformation, which became more outrageous with each iteration. Peter Smith, a researcher for the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, says eating bugs has become a fast-growing conspiracy amongst the far right. Eating the bugs is a phrase that refers to a conspiracy theory we've been seeing quite often in different conspiratorial spaces, but predominantly on the far right. It refers to the idea that we are not only going to be having alternative protein sources being explored by companies, but as part of a larger plan to eventually replace meat products. Now, again, it kind of sucks that like this Ontario company, a cricket factory that was making food designed to be consumed by animals, pets, by the way, not human animals, but our pets, was also at the centerpiece of a lot of this, being like, you are part of the globalist cabal trying to feed us insects. So trying to feed your cats and dogs insects. But I guess that's apparently too far as well. Development goals, which are ambitious targets, sometimes kind of loose, set by the United Nations and international development organizations that get misconstrued to these fiendish plots to keep everyone inside of urban spaces. You don't only need to look to the far right, by the way. There's also a really big vilification going on right now of lab-grown meat, specifically by people like John Fetterman, and, you know, trying to show you photos of lab-grown, like, you know, the processing centers and being like, yeah, it looks natural. I'm going to stick to my cows, thanks, and shit like that. Again, totally ignoring that there is certainly a monstrously huge demand for meat and, you know, both environmental groups and animal rights activists have been trying for a very long time to try and curb or reduce human consumption habits of meats. And they haven't had a lot of success. They've tried different policies on that. They've gone everything from shaming and shocking people with the actual horrifying images of factory farming. Hasn't seemed to make a dent. There was another, policy that was taken on by, say, Bill Gates. And I think even Arnold Schwarzenegger joined teams with them to try and be like, okay, how about this? How about instead of trying to reduce your meat consumption, we just cut out one kind? What if we stop eating red meat? Would you be fine with that? You still get all the bacon, the pork, the ribs, the chicken wings, the fried chicken. You can have all of that, but we'll get rid of the steaks. Would you be down with this idea? Also didn't work out. Did not make an impacting dent upon the consumption habits of North Americans when it came to how much meat they wanted to be eating. So there's been a lot of different changes or attempts at changes. There's, of course, the boon of a whole bunch of alternative meats, which have kind of had their moment, I'd say, about 4 or 5 years ago when you started seeing a lot of the Beyond Burgers come along, and then now Impossible Burgers. And now, obviously, there's a move towards having the commercial mass manufacturing of lab-grown meats. And yes, to be able to have both less impact on the environment, less cruelty towards animals, and the potential to make healthier protein sources and alternatives. I know it's a very scary thing. People call them Frankenmeats. People call them abominations, all this kind of stuff. But again, we're in the middle of a complete climate catastrophe. You know, call it a crisis, call it whatever you want, but we need to have a very robust tool set in how we handle that. Some venues will be, you know, let's lower the amount of meat consumption in so far as if you can get alternative meats that taste identical, look identical, and feel identical to, you know, regularly produced meats, then do you have a problem with eating the lab-grown meat if it turns out to not have, negative impacts upon your health, doesn't increase, the potential carcinogenic compounds that you get from eating regular meats, all that kind of stuff? Would you be okay with that? Some people, no, gross. Some people, sure, fine. And then for the sure, fine, that's less people who will then be dependent on the entire factory farm industry, things like that. It's really easy to vilify and to make it sound scary when you're like, they're making you eat bugs, but it's not that they're literally making you eat worms instead of having a steak. And it's like the New World Order is trying to get you to eat the worms. You're not going to do that. Leave the worms for RFK Jr.'s brain. We have to save the worms. Two Canadians, Dad and Hussein Tabaya, were among those killed in southern Lebanon. Their son says they were trying to leave their home in the south, but they were hit with an airstrike that was struck in heavy traffic. I was going to talk a little bit about Lebanon. Israel attacks Lebanon. Because apparently there may be an upcoming ground invasion. That's just around the corner. Israel is responsible for 81% of the cross-border attacks with Lebanon, killing at least 752 people between October 7th and September 20th. Just some charts for everyone to take a look at. I'm seeing a lot of liberal warmongers and defenders of Israel right now saying that they're simply responding to attacks. That's why they're doing all of these terrorist thingies, because they're responding to, of course, the attacks from Lebanon, who have stated that they want the genocide in Gaza to end. And so because of that, they're now worthwhile targets, which I guess is trying to kind of scare everybody into thinking that it's okay for them to do what they're doing. The Hamas protests in yesterday's All Out for Lebanon in America that took place in New York City. Shout out to, Aliyah Scootcaster for taking this footage firsthand.
Back up!
Vanguard stuff to watch. Yeah, last night.
You are unlawful.
So this was taking place yesterday in New York City. UN Attorney General, Colombian President Gustavo Petro warns against an international status quo ruled by countries most capable of destroying humanity yesterday. They were having an emergency meeting about the potential for a full-scale war taking place in the Middle East.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
It's backed by, of course, the U.S. In this room, a president's ability to communicate depends on the amount of dollars he has in his budget. In the number of warplanes you have, and in the end, in your country's capacity to destroy humanity. That's why they don't listen to us when we vote. Stop the genocide in Gaza. Even if we are the majority of the world's presidents and representatives of most of humanity, they don't listen to us. The control of humanity on the basis of barbarism is under construction, and a demonstration is Gaza, in Lebanon. When Gaza dies, all of humanity will die. Very powerful and I think very true words by Gustavo Petro. Biden says an all-out war is possible in the Middle East and weirdly repeats that he is a Zionist in an interview on ABC's.
An all-out war is possible, but I think there's also the opportunity, or still in play, to have a settlement that could fundamentally change the whole region. Mm-hmm. And I look, one of the things that I found is there's the Arab world very much wants to have a settlement. Mm-hmm. Because they know what it does for them. Mm-hmm. They're willing to make arrangements with Israel and alliances with Israel if Israel changes some policies. And I've known Bibi Netanyahu for a long, long time. And I'm a very strong supporter of Israel. I make no bones about it. Mm-hmm. I said years ago I was a Zionist. All a Zionist means is that there needs to be an Israel. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, though, that
that's all it means.
Bibi has a picture I signed for him when he was a young member of the embassy here. Mm-hmm. In the United States. And it was 8x10 picture he asked me to sign. I went, Bibi, I love you, but don't agree with the damn thing you say or do, Joe.
Yeah.
And I do, and he's right. I don't agree with his position. There needs to be a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it needs to happen.
Again, it's beyond horrifying to watch this old genocidal monster talk this way and to kind of act as if it's like, hey, you know, I don't really agree with his policies, but I love him. Love the man. Love him. Love, 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 love him. Also, yes, I am a proud Zionist. And in addition to that, I want to say that, I think the rest of the Arab world wants a settlement. That's for sure. I can guarantee that. You know, they want Israel to do things a little differently. We're in the middle of a genocide. We're in the middle of a full-scale war breaking out in the Middle East, of which Israel is trying to provoke multiple countries to engage with it in direct warfare right now. That this is not a moment where it's just like, yeah, you know, it's tough to really understand what's going on, but you know, I think Benjamin Netanyahu, I love him, love the guy. I got a signed photo with him, you know.
There's a way to do it, and they have a possibility. I don't want to exaggerate it. But a possibility, if we can deal with a ceasefire in Lebanon, that it can move into dealing with the West Bank. But we also have God.
I feel like we're doing like 20 steps back and then hoping for one step forward here. Well, I mean, okay, first off, the ceasefire deal in Gaza, that's kind of off the table. There's nothing that can be done there whatsoever. And if they need $20 billion more arms sales in order to continue the genocide, we will make that possible. In addition to that, I think what we're really hoping for now is a ceasefire agreement with Lebanon. Why don't we start there? We get a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Lebanon so that doesn't get a little too bit more intent, and then we can work on other theaters of potential warfare that are taking place.
Also to deal with.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but it's possible, and I'm using every bit of energy I have with my team, and you know from the Defense Department, you know it well, to get this done.
Every bit of energy. Again, it feels like that old Simpsons thing. We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. Yeah. Yeah, we really want to apply pressure to try and get them to agree to a ceasefire deal with no terms or conditions applied whatsoever. No sanctions, no stopping of shipment, no pausing of shipment. No, just you get all the weapons you need, all the weapons and tools you need to do the genocide. But we would like it to probably stop eventually. So when you're ready, on your own time.
Desire to see change. I mean,
so he sucks. A damning report came out yesterday showing that Anthony Blinken and the U.S. State Department were made very aware of the forced starvation of the civilian population in Gaza, including over 1 million children, that they were being forcibly starved, that apparently under regulations and rules that they are not supposed to be able to do military shipments to a country that is preventing the distribution of necessary food, aid, and medical supplies. But they did it anyway, and then they lied about it to Congress. So the order of events is that they were made aware with very verifiable, damning evidence that what was taking place was a forced starvation of a civilian population of half children. There was a prevention of food, medical aid, and other crucial supplies from being able to reach the people who needed the most. And so they were made aware of all of that. They then went to Congress, lied about the severity of it in order to justify, again, more support for Israel. That's, again, damning. It's good that that kind of stuff gets leaked and is made available. When asked about it, it seems like, you know, Anthony Blinken is pretty much sticking to his course. Secretary of State Blinken is asked about ProPublica's reporting, stating that he ignored two different reports within the administration that Israel is deliberately blocking aid into Gaza. Blinken says this is actually pretty typical. His job is to draw conclusions from different expert reports and then put down our own report.
Mr. Secretary, ProPublica has determined that two agencies found that Israel is deliberately stopping humanitarian aid from getting to civilians. And as you well know, the U.S. government says that it has to restrict supplying weapons to a country that does this type of thing. Why have we not done so?
Yeah. So this is actually pretty typical. We had a report to put out on the humanitarian situation in Gaza and what Israel was doing to try to make sure that people got the assistance they needed. And I had different assessments from different parts of the State Department, from other agencies that were involved, like USAID. My job is to sort through them, which I did, draw some conclusions from that, and we put out our report. And we found that Israel needed to do a better job on the humanitarian assistance. We've seen improvements since then. It's still not sufficient.
Lies. Lies. More lies. Lies upon lies within lies. Before we turn to the Republicans, who are acting just as wild as ever, I do want to quickly talk about this story. Again, I don't know if you know this, but every 4 years, pop stars get to be extreme radical activists, and they do their radical activism not by starting, you know, global intifadas or anything, but they endorse a political candidate for a party known as the Democrats. And then when musicians, pop stars do that, celebrities and actors as well, that's them doing an activism. And then everyone says, wow, those people are really politically involved, aren't they? They came forward and they endorsed the Democratic candidate for president. But when that doesn't happen, oh no, oh no. As is the case with Chapel Roan. Chapel Roan is a, I would say, a very famous pop star who is having her much-deserved moment in the spotlight right now. She's been working for a very, very long time, making music for a very, very long time. It kind of sounds like a modern-day Kate Bush, if I was to describe her particular music style. She's also been a lifelong activist for LGBTQ plus rights and has done a really, really good job whenever she's given a microphone to try and normalize the idea of being queer and make queer kids feel more safe, which is a beautiful thing. And she's very, very awesome for doing that whenever she's given the chance. However, she's now apparently Hitler 3 by the resistance libs because she hasn't come out and endorsed the Harris Waltz ticket. She has had to release, since not endorsing the Harris-Waltz ticket, a statement explaining why. And I think her statement is as clear as day, but apparently it's not enough for some folk.
Endorsing and voting are completely different. I don't agree with a lot of what is going on with, like, policies. Like, obviously, fuck the policies of the right, but also fuck some of the policies on the left. That's why I can't endorse. That's why I can't, like, put my entire name and my entire project behind one. Because there is no way I can stand behind some of the left's completely transphobic and completely genocidal views. So yeah. There are huge problems on both. You know what is right and wrong, and so do I. Fuck Trump for fucking real, but fuck some of the shit that has gone down in the Democratic Party that has failed people like me and you. And more so, Palestine. And more so, every marginalized community in the world. So no, I'm not gonna settle for what the options that are in front of me. And you're not gonna make me feel bad for that. So yeah, I'm voting for fucking Kamala. But I'm not settling for what has been offered because that's questionable. It's questionable.
Yeah, I'd say my only criticism of any of this is that it's not the left, it's the liberals, but again, little details. But yeah, wow, oof, what? A pop star has a nuanced take on the situation, of which I completely agree. Yeah, if I was an American in a swing state, of course, I would be probably voting for the Harris-Waltz ticket, while at the same time condemning the Harris-Waltz administration. The moment they come into power, while simultaneously condemning the Biden administration the moment they come into power. And there's a huge difference between spending time out of your day with what free moments you have, not enjoying your own free time, but getting behind a phone and canvassing, or going and knocking on doors and canvassing. I've done that for a number of local politicians, provincial politicians, and federal politicians, of whom I deeply believed in, because I believed in their cause. You know, if there's an indigenous politician who's fighting for land back, who's fighting to end genocide, who's fighting for equality, who's fighting to, fight for LGBTQ plus justice, for racial justice, stuff like that, then yes, I feel inclined to donate my time or my money to help and canvass for those people. If it's like, hey, by the way, There's two options coming up, and there's a provincial election. I can tell you an example right now. There's a provincial election coming up in October in British Columbia. The two options are between the old party that used to be Sock Dems that have now pivoted to the center very rapidly to try and appeal to centrist voters, and the far right. I am not going to be voting for the far right. I'm going to be voting for the BC NDP. Am I going to be doting time to canvass for David Eby, someone who stole the election in the first place, someone who's promised to hire 250 more cops, who's doing forced institutionalization, who's reversing all of his climate change policies in real time? No, fuck off and fuck him. But does that mean that I want conservatives to come to power? No, I don't. I will be voting, hopefully, for them not to be coming into power. But again, as someone who has been working as a musician for a very, very long time, and again, her success that she's having, which is very mainstream now and being played on the radio, top 40, all that kind of stuff, that is relatively new. I know, like, Chapel Roan fans who've been fans of her for a long time are so excited right now, especially queer ones, because it's like, you know, our queen is finally having her moment in the spotlight. Look at that. And at that same time, it's like someone who has been working her whole life to become an advocate for LGBTQ plus rights and stuff like that, does she have to be saddled with the branding of what the current administration is and doesn't want to be saddled with that branding? That's also within her right, you know? And for people to suddenly condemn her for it, to be like, yeah, well, you support Trump then. This means you support Trump. She's saying fuck Trump, literally. Those are the words, fuck Trump. Also saying that she is going to be voting for Kamala, that the thing that she is doing, she's going to be voting for the Harris-Waltz ticket, but also doesn't want to endorse their political party because she doesn't want to endorse anyone who's fueling genocide.
Our actions of our government, the actions of the internet, the actions of you and me, if this is what you are not understanding, you know what? Endorsing someone, if someone is publicly endorsing a political figure, that doesn't even mean that they're gonna fucking vote for them. Because as I said in my other video, actions speak louder than words. And I'm not gonna let this narrative, like me not it playing both sides. No. This is not me playing both sides. This is me questioning both sides because this is what we have in front of us. So if you look at my statement and you're still like, she's just playing both sides, like she doesn't wanna, no, you're not getting it. I'm critiquing both sides because they're both so fucked up. Voting is all we have right now in the system. And so I encourage it yet again, vote for who in your mind is the best option for what we have right now. Because it's all we can do. And I hope this makes it clear that no, I'm not picking the sides of what we have right now. Yes, one's obviously better than the other. But Jesus fucking Christ, I hope you don't settle for what we have and put your name behind someone that you don't fully, fully trust because of their blatant actions.
And also, like, so we're going to talk a little bit about, obviously, the murder of Marcellus Williams. But that's the situation now where I saw right after the execution, there was a whole bunch of people who started saying, I am so mad right now. I'm so mad. I'm so mad at every single Bernie bro, every single I'm not with her, every single person who refused to vote for Hillary Clinton. This is your fault. I hope you're proud. I hope you're proud of what you did. And I was like making, you know, yet another state-sponsored lynching of a black man about your weird little twisted version of political history. Because everyone wants to, I know, point the finger at someone else. Hillary didn't win because of Bernie Bros. Hillary didn't win because of all this negativity and all the misogyny on the dirtbag left. And Hillary didn't win because of Chapo Trap House. And Hillary didn't win because of Hassan Piker. And Hillary didn't win because of Hillary. Hillary didn't, like, there's, like, again, when you look at the percentage of what the actual left makes up in America, sometimes between, like, 5 and 6% of people who, like, identify very distinctly with very, very far leftist policies and stuff like that. I'm not talking about the idea of selling people on leftist ideas where all of a sudden they're like, oh, that's true, I agree with that, it's palatable. I'm just talking about people who might identify as, say, socialists, communists, anarchists, stuff like that, right? Not a huge percentage of the average American or of the voting public in general in North America. But to consistently blame them as spoilers or fucking things up or like, oh, these pesky little like lefties, if only they didn't exist, we'd get the things that we want. They're the true enemy. Rather than looking at like, is there anything to be said about the Hillary Clinton campaign? not really, you know, canvassing in the Rust Belt, not appealing to demographics that, you know, have been really pissed off and isolated by what they see as elitism, as what they see as someone calling them deplorables, looking down upon them. This just taking it for granted that a lot of these typically blue states are going to swing in your direction just by virtue of the fact that you happen to be the Democratic ticket. Is perhaps any of your war hawkish behavior and what happened in Libya going to affect anyone who's not really for those forms of American backed imperialism and the mass slaughter of children in other countries simply to uphold, again, a lot of business interests in the U.S. Is that going to affect any aspect of Hillary Clinton's campaign? Like, people did get out and vote for Hillary Clinton. She won the majority of the votes. It wasn't necessarily that a couple of Bernie bros spoiled the entire fucking thing and didn't keep, like, resuscitating that corpse over and over and over. This is the reason why the Supreme Court of the U.S. is so fucked up. This is the reason why Trump was able to appoint a whole bunch of, state-level judges who are so backwards and draconian that they would allow something like this to happen. This is the reason why. Rather than, like, I didn't see a lot of those same people just posting nonstop about how you could potentially try and reverse this by canvassing. Here's a list to the petition. Here's a list to a phone number that you can call. Here's a list to where you could do activism. Here's an IRL place where you could drop off the signatures of people trying to reverse course on this decision. All of that. It's basically after the fact that it happens, it's like, all right, now let's all simultaneously clutch our pearls together, unify, and be like, this is really profoundly fucked up that a lot of you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. That's the reason this all took place, right? And there is a paradox when it comes to capital punishment, because if the punishment for killing someone who is innocent is death, and then you yourselves are responsible for killing someone who's innocent, then what happens? What's next? Innocent Project statement on the execution of Marcellus Williams, a black man convicted of killing a white woman. Mr. Williams maintained his innocence until the very end. Tonight, Missouri executed an innocent man. Our hearts are with the family and friends of Marcellus Williams and Felicia Gale, who have suffered imaginable loss and trauma. Mr. Williams' story echoes that of too many others caught in our country's broken criminal legal system. A black man convicted of killing a white woman, Mr. Williams maintained his innocence until the very end. His conviction was based on the testimony of two eyewitnesses who were paid for their testimony. No DNA evidence linked him to the crime. And the current St. Louis County Prosecuting Office acknowledged that the errors made by the trial prosecutors, including mishandling the murder weapon and intentionally excluding black prospective jurors, are a violation of the Constitution, contributed to a wrongful conviction. Nonetheless, the Missouri Attorney General's office relentlessly pursued Mr. Williams' execution and opposed clemency. The Attorney General and Missouri Governor, Mike Parson, who ultimately denied the request for clemency, ignored the wishes of the victim's husband, who has consistently made clear that he opposed the death penalty for Mr. Williams. We are profoundly grateful to everyone who joined our fight for justice. As United States Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, who, before his appointment to the court, also fought for the lives of black men condemned to death, once said, America can do better, because America has no choice but to do better. Profoundly and deeply sad, disturbing, fucked up on all levels. It was one of those things that even yesterday, while we were trying to, you know, promote people to canvass and call and write out about it, deep down in the pit of my soul, I was so exhausted with this process, because I've witnessed it happen so many times. We don't have capital punishment in Canada, so I have to witness it happening in the United States, but every single time it does, it seems like you're holding out hope for the movie moment. You know, which is a profoundly grotesque way to kind of have to deal with these kind of things, where you're just sitting back being like, it's going to be like in the movies. It is. Humanity will do the right thing. There's no way that an innocent guy who clearly can be exonerated in this case will be executed in the worst and most brutal and torturous of methods. There's going to be that call that just at the last minute, as he's sitting there, you know, sweating and strapped to a chair or something like that, about to be injected with toxic chemicals. The general is going to call, and they're going to get the call, and the whole thing's going to be shut down. And you know, all the white saviors can cheer and hold up all the things that they were doing along the way, and then, you know, it'll eventually be in a movie somewhere, and it'll happen. And like every single time, you know, the vast majority of these come to pass, it doesn't. The reason why there's movies about this is that those are the few times that does happen. But for the vast majority of people who happen to be both innocent and facing trial facing execution, they're executed. That's how this usually goes down. And it is one of those things where, you know, you really wish this wasn't the way of parts of the world were in 2024, but they are. And so, yeah, blaming everyone but the people who are still supporting this brutal and fucked up system is not the way to go about it. It's just, you know, everyone's in shock and awe, and they turn that shock and awe to infighting rather than actually looking at the hatred that is spread on a regular basis that leads to, again, the dehumanization of black people, their over-incarceration rates, their over-policing in the criminal justice system, all that kind of stuff. All right, I'm going to talk about the shots fired. Let me just change the bottom here. So apparently there was an assassination attempt on the Harris-Waltz campaign today. Shots fired at Kamala Harris' office. I was like, either they're really being cinematic with this, they're like, they're really building, they want to draw you in, or there's no audio. I think it's that one. Shots have been reportedly fired at U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign office in Tempe, Arizona. Is it Tempe? I know I was Topanga, Florida. I said Topanga, and I said it over and over and over again. And then after the episode, I was like, I should have looked that up. It's Topanga. Fuck me. So is it Tempe? All right, there we go. I'm not gonna fuck this up from the jump. Tempe, Arizona. There you go. Damage from several bullets was found to the building and windows following reports of gunfire after midnight on Monday, local time. Let's see if there's a report that actually has any interviews or updates. No. Oh, also, has Elon Musk commented on this yet? Because I know he was trying to spread some weird conspiracy theory that was kind of like, yeah, no one's trying to assassinate Harris. Wonder what's going on there. Police revealed they received a call from staffers at the DNC office who reported finding gunshots through the front windows. Police claim this is the second shooting incident as many weeks after the building was targeted previously on September 16th. It is believed the alleged gunshots from September 16th were fired from either a BB gun or a pellet gun, but nobody inside the office... there was no one inside the office when either shooting incident occurred.
If you want to really see something that said, take a look at what happened.
The incident involving Ms. Harris also comes after a recent assassination attempt targeting Donald Trump for a second time. Despite these incidents, Donald Trump has continued to show his face in public, attending rallies to win over American voters. Donald Trump and Kamala Harris have condemned the assassination attempts, saying there's no place for violence in the U.S. Trump and Harris have been campaigning across the U.S., trying to win over crucial swing states ahead of the presidential campaign. So I think that's pretty much the extent of it. An update from Mike, though, that apparently for people who don't want Trump to win is pretty good news.
So So a couple of weeks ago, we looked at aggregate polling data after a couple of polls indicated that Kamala Harris's numbers nationally were seemingly starting to stagnate a little bit. In fact, her national average actually declined, which was understandably alarming for some of my viewers, given how much is at stake in this election. But at the time, I told you all not to panic because her overall numbers weren't really that bad. And I told you all that we would revisit these polls in a couple of weeks. Well, guess what? That time has now come. And I'm here to say that I was right to tell you all to not panic because it's clear that Kamala Harris is back on top. And it's evident that she got a really nice post-debate polling bump. So I want to start with polling aggregators, because 2 weeks ago when we looked at Real Clear Politics polling averages, her national lead was 1.3%. So it tightened a little bit. But now, 2 weeks later, she is up by, look at that, 2.1 points. That is a massive jump when we're talking about polling averages here. Now, when you look at the individual polls driving this surge, you'll see that she's reaching new highs in so many of these post-debate polls. Plus 4 in Yahoo, plus 4 in Data for Progress, plus 5 in Morning Consult, plus 4 in CBS News, plus 6 in Reuters, which is insane. Now, when it comes to that New York Times poll, she's actually gone down and she's tied with Donald Trump, and she's also tied with him in Quinnipiac's poll. But it seems like those polls appear to be outliers, at least when it comes to the national numbers. Now, we talked about this before, but RCP isn't my favorite aggregator because they do include a lot of junk.
Zachap, thank you for the raid. Can anyone go to twitch.tv/Zachap? Give Zachap a follow back. And also thank you to Oh Boy for being a member on the Surf Times. Any chance you consider doing a collab with Dusty Smith, the Dusty Smith Show and the Cult of Dusty? Maybe on the upcoming US election or other things. I have already collaborated with Dusty before. I think that was like 3 years ago, but I came on his show to talk about some politics and stuff. Yeah, I'd have Dusty on. Dusty, if you don't know, he's like an old ex. He had like a really massive conservative channel. And then he turned, I would say a lot more liberal than lefty after, kind of one of those people who used to be on the right and then went to the left, but didn't go to the left because he thought it would be lucrative, because it tanks your channel, as you realize pretty quickly. If you have a huge fan base who loves your kind of like, you know, pro-Republican talking points, and then if you're like, actually, the Republicans have lost their minds, then it does kind of destroy your channel. But yeah, I'd be down. I don't know if he'll answer my text, though, because the last time I messaged Dusty was to tell him, because I got a direct message from him on Discord, and it seemed like his account was hacked, because it was one of those like, hey, blah, 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 here's a link, buy this. And then I just wrote back, have you been hacked? And then I didn't get a response. So I don't know if he's unhacked or if his account's still hacked. But yeah, I got nothing nothing opposed to doing stuff with Dusty.
Pollsters. So I think that you can get a better picture of where things are at when you look at 538 or Silver Bulletin, because they tend to include more reputable pollsters. So their average is going to be a lot more stable, which is why I like it. You're not going to see huge increases or decreases. Now, 2 weeks ago, a day before the debate, Harris had a 2.8 national lead in 538. Today, she's at 2.4, so she went down a little bit, but that's not that big of a decrease. Now, when you go to Nate Silver's Silver Bulletin, she's at 2.9 on average, when she was at 2.4 a couple of weeks ago. So of all three polling aggregators that we use to gauge where the race is at, they all have Harris at about a 2-point-plus lead over Donald Trump, and two of the three of them show that her lead actually increased, which is a great indication. Now, if you step back and you look at the bigger trend here, she's reclaimed her lead. And on top of that, she's gaining new highs in certain polls, which is either an indication that A, these new highs are just outliers, or B, there's actually real potential for growth. Now, when it comes to Donald Trump, the same can't be said. He's already hit his ceiling, and there's not much room for growth, whereas these polls are indicating that there is a lot of room for growth with Kamala Harris. Now, the next thing to look out for is the debate between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, because if Tim Walz is able to deliver a knockout blow in the same way that Harris did in her debate with Trump, we could see, once again, another bump for Harris, which is why the potential for growth here is so important. Now, even if J.D. Vance unexpectedly knocks it out of the park and does really well against Tim Walz, which I can't necessarily foresee, but let's say it happens, it's still hard to imagine a pretty significant boost for Donald Trump, because again, he's kind of hit that ceiling. He's tapped out on the support, and it doesn't really seem like it's going to get that much better for him, which is why this potential for growth is so important. But we're just talking about national polls here, and of course, battleground states are the most important because that's going to be ultimately what decides the election. So where is Harris at when it comes to swing states? Well, in Arizona, she is down by 2.2 points. In Nevada, she's up by 0.4. In Georgia, she's down by 2.1 points. In North Carolina, she's down by half a percentage point. In Wisconsin, she's up by 1. In Michigan, she's up by 1.8. And in perhaps the most important state in this election, Pennsylvania, she's up by 0.6. So in the toss-up states, obviously it's not as rosy of a picture as it is nationally, but it's still really close. And we're seeing this weird phenomenon where Kamala Harris is reaching new highs in national polls, but she's not gaining as much ground in these toss-up states. The question is, why? Well, I think that the answer is obvious. Donald Trump is campaigning in those states and countering her messaging. So if you're an undecided voter in, say, Washington state, and you tune into the debate and you like what you see and you decide, you know what, I'm going to support Harris, you're likely going to continue supporting her throughout the election because there's not going to be a push from Trump in your state since he knows it leans Democrat and it doesn't make sense to invest in Washington state. However, people in swing states are seemingly more fickle since they're bombarded with contradictory and counter messages from both campaigns. So if somebody in Pennsylvania, for example, sees Harris's performance at the debate and they really like her, well, their opinion could change over time as they see more pro-Trump ads or they get reached out to by the Trump campaign. And we're facing a situation where Trump is leading in the Sun Belt states while Harris has the edge in Rust Belt states. Now, that might be worrying, but there's actually still cause for optimism. First of all, North Carolina really is in play for Harris, and there, the GOP governor's campaign, the Republican, just imploded. That could suppress GOP turnout in that state for Donald Trump and put Harris over the edge. Furthermore, when you move away from Harris and Trump and you just focus on Senate Democrats running against Republicans, there's some really interesting things happening. For example, Colin Allred, the Democratic Party Senate candidate in the state of Texas, is actually leading Ted Cruz by 1 point, according to a Morning Consult poll. In fact, Democrats are doing good across the board in their Senate races in that same poll. For example, they're all ahead of their Republican opponents massively in the Rust Belt. But if you look at states like Nevada and Arizona, where Harris is narrowly ahead and behind, respectively, the Democratic Senate candidates are absolutely crushing their GOP opponents. Now, to be clear, that does not mean that Harris will definitely win the state if the Democratic Party Senate candidate carries the state, but it is possible that Harris benefits from the enthusiasm for those candidates if this poll is correct. Now, usually it's the other way around, where the candidate at the top of the ticket affects down ballot races, and that's certainly true, but I think that ticket splitting in this day and age is very unusual because of how polarized we are. So if these Democrats pull off victories in these states, which is looking likely according to polling data, it's much more likely that Harris carries those states too, right? Mm-hmm. Now, aside from head-to-head polling data, there's other factors at play that work in Harris's favor. One of them is that her favorability has sharply increased. In fact, it surge in a way that's actually very surprising in this day and age. Steve Kornacki of MSNBC is going to explain what her numbers look like from their poll.
The View, the overall perception of Kamala Harris. Remember, before she got in the race, a lot of talk that, you know, her numbers didn't look better than Biden's. She was 32 positive, 50 negative before getting in this race. And now this is what you see.
And we have to pause here because this is the largest increase that we have seen for any politician since George W. Bush in the wake of the September 11th attacks on this issue.
Absolutely, Kristen. I mean, we were seeing numbers.
And will she squander the good faith in the same way? Like
numbers like this for years for Kamala Harris. Now you're seeing a very different story. And what goes into that, that new level of popularity she has? Take a look here if we can. There it is. Call this up here. Some of the groups that have gravitated the most towards Harris, just in terms of favorable, because black voters, 24-point increase, independents, 20, young
like, fucking, you know, you gotta love how there were so many people who have dedicated their entire lives to, like, you know, putting on an air or a persona of being these astute political analysts, right? Like the people who come forward saying that, like, oh, you know, the children of the world don't understand how politics truly works. All right, no one but Joe Biden can defeat Donald Trump. The only person who can potentially, of all the millions, hundreds of millions of Americans who could actually go up against Donald Trump right now, happens to be Joe Biden. He's done it before. He'll do it again. And then, like, every person who just kind of, like, analyzes media, you know, on the side, even, not even as a living, but just on the side, was like, no, it's a front-facing job. It's a job in which you have to communicate. He can't speak English. This will not be possible. There is not a pathway to victory here. You need to replace him. He needs to step down. And people were just, like, I felt like people lost a relative. I felt like all of the Brooklyn Dad accounts and all of the Blue Anon accounts and then the Lib accounts, every single one of them were like, you're traitors. This is a coup. A man who gave everything for you. Joe did everything for us. Joe, it has to be Joe. Why is everyone turning their back on Joe? Nancy Pelosi assassinated him. She's strangling his corpse right now. How did none of you just recognize that this is politics? It's a form of entertainment in America. It's a form of performance, and this is very clear that Joe Biden is unable to communicate, let alone, like, you know, I'm not trying to get as a leftist, I am profoundly disgusted by that man and everything that comes out of his mouth. I feel violated when he speaks, you know. That's not where I'm coming from. This from taking off my leftist hat and putting on my, you know, political observationist hat and just watching this play out. I don't see a pathway to victory for a guy who is trying so hard to just keep on proving that he is in fact not an old man, but he is a Clint Eastwood old man. He's Clint Eastwood-y, right? Everyone loves Clint Eastwood, especially the older version of Clint Eastwood when he was talking to chairs and shit. That's who we're at. So Biden's got to be the guy, you know? And you're like, but nah. Yeah, I'll tell you this. I think you have a much better pathway to victory if you can have someone who doesn't have to be saddled with all of Biden's perhaps genocidal baggage and can try a change of action or a change of course. After all, this is not me saying this. Listen to Joe Biden, who said that he's going to be kind of a stand-in candidate as he prepares, you know, for the Harris administration eventually. But here we are. Hey, Lotta Glatz, good to see you. Everyone check out Lotta Glatz's channel. This would be actually a good strat, giving the country the first female president right away, regardless of the vote. Look, I'm just all in for pissing off Hillary, all right? That's the whole strategy here. There's nothing else going on. There's no other issues. There's not any other issue. I'm a single-issue voter, and my single issue is watching Hillary Clinton be pissed off and pretend not to be pissed off. But even she is taking that away from me because she's found a way to make it about herself, of course. I should have seen this coming. I should have predicted this, you know? Of all the plays, I should have seen that Hillary Clinton would try to pretend like this is her movement, and sure enough, she has. Sure enough, she's done a whole, like, rebranding where it's like, I shattered the glass ceiling so that a woman of color could finally become the first female president. And then you're just like, God damn it. God, you're making this about yourself. How could you? How could you? This was the only benefit to this election.
Hey, if you'd like to unlock secret bonus episodes as well as uncensored content, go to patreon.com/theserfs. This show is produced by Anna Loves Riley, Arian McCarthy, Cheryl Alvarez, Comrade Junkie, Doug Caddy, Everything Important, Hagbard Saleem, Jimmy Sombrero, Multimondi, Omni, Political Puppy, Preston Kroll, Quiet185, Riley and Anna, Roller Dragon, Cernicus, Stellar Gwyn, Sebastian Demel, Travis McClinton, Trinsel, Words Greenwood. With additional support coming from all of these amazing human beings right here.